No risk it, no biscuit.
Coming from the Arizona desert, presented by SBNation.com. For Arizona Cardinals fans, by Arizona Cardinals fans, with outsider and insider's perspective, this is Revenge of the Birds. Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans. This is Revenge of the Birds Radio, and I'm your host, Jess Root. And we are here today recording on a Thursday evening, but we're not doing our all-Cardinal show, as if we already had the all-Cardinal show with Seth Cox earlier in this week. We are looking ahead to the game in Week 5 against the Detroit Lions. To do that, I've brought in Pride of Detroit's lead writer, head blogger, lead editor, who does everything and anything and everything on the site, our SB Nation partner for the Detroit Lions, Pride of Detroit. I've got Jeremy Reisman on the line. Jeremy, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. How are you?
And I appreciate, I'm doing great. I would imagine in terms of football worlds, neither one of us is terribly thrilled about the outcome of last week. But in terms of everyday life, hey, life is great. It's football season, not much else to complain about. We'll go ahead and get started, Jeremy. We're going to talk a little, kind of get to know the Lions. Actually, a team that the Cardinals are actually quite familiar with. It seems like a yearly tradition where the two teams play. Unfortunately for Detroit, yeah. It's not, I believe it's now six straight contests that the Lions, yep, haven't won. What is it? Is there anything, any sort of pattern that you see over the years where the Lions just can't manage to get over? I mean, but Ryan Lindley beat starting for the Cardinals in 2012, and the only win they got after their 4-0 start was against the Lions. What is it about the Cardinals that makes the Lions' lives so difficult?
I honestly think it's just been a really tough matchup for them. You know, the Lions have really made a living in the last five or so years by having some all-stars on offense, but the Cardinals seem to have all the tools on defense to shut down those guys. So you got your Patrick Peterson. You just got, like, a really good secondary there, and it seems to halt the Lions' passing attack, which is really the only thing the offense typically has going for them.
So entering this year, obviously coming off a playoff year, you lose a couple of players on defense. You lose Nick Fairley, you lose Ndamukong Suh. You lose on offense, Reggie Bush. What were the expectations heading in? Obviously, playoff year, Matthew Stafford, who has been, you know, he's had some fantastic years, he's had uneven years, but you're coming off a playoff year this last year. What were the expectations entering this season?
Expectations were super high. I would say, I think we ran a poll and over 70, maybe even over 80% of Lions fans thought the Lions were going to make the playoffs.
Are you there, Jeremy?
A small step down. They hope, most fans hope that Haloti Ngata would kind of replace Sue at least a little bit, and they also had a couple extra signings on the defensive line, like Tyron Walker, who would kind of mitigate all the losses. And then on offense, the thought was, well, it couldn't be much worse than last year. It was pretty bad, and learning under Joe Lombardi, the offensive coordinator, whose first year was last year, now in his second year, the thought was, under this new system, the Lions would know the system a little better. Amir Abdullah would fix, you know where Reggie Bush kind of wasn't that great last year. And then the Lions added a couple new offensive line tools to hopefully upgrade that unit, and it just has not worked out pretty much in any of those ideas coming into the preseason.
So what has been, you usually see some improvements. Granted, you've had some personnel changes. What in the first couple of games, in the first few weeks, just has been the issue offensively? Obviously, the running game isn't working yet. Dead last in both yards per game and yards per carry. despite having, I mean, in terms of personnel, Joique Bell was a pretty productive guy when he was in the lineup before. You had Amir Abdullah, who actually Bruce Arians singled out as the guy, as a guy that Cardinals need to watch for in terms of pass in the passing game and the running game, that he's a guy who the Cardinals were really high on. A guy who can help out in the screen game, who can bust free if you don't tackle him. He was actually, of all the Lions, he was the first guy that on the offensive side of the ball for Detroit that Arians mentioned on Wednesday. What seems to be the issue? Why is this offense, which the Lions over the last several years have been known for having a sort of an offensive juggernaut of a team, what's happened?
I think really almost all of the issues can be drawn back to the offensive line. Pretty much any one of their tools have been neutralized by terrible offensive line play. It doesn't matter who the Lions have put back in the backfield. They're getting hit in the backfield before they even reach the line of scrimmage. And to just kind of give you an outlook on how things have changed from the preseason until now in week five, Pro Football Focus rated the top 10 offensive lines of the year before the season started. The Lions ranked number 9. They put out, I believe it was today on Thursday, where offensive lines rank through 4 weeks, and the Lions are dead last. So that pretty much tells the entire story right there.
Yeah, as a fan of a team that traditionally has had offensive line struggles, we're basically entering every year since 1988 up until now. That really can kind of do in any success unless you have a guy like Kurt Warner who took a below average line and made them look okay, at least. At what point does this start to fall on, or has it begun where the rumblings about what Matthew Stafford, where does this fall on his shoulders at this point that he's not the guy that the team can use?
There's some rumblings here and there. I think what most fans are using as a scapegoat other than the offensive line is actually the offensive coordinator, Joe Lombardi. The line offense hasn't only looked bad, but at times they've looked confused out there with passes being thrown to routes that aren't being run, to blown blocking assignments, to just poor play calling. Really, Joe Lombardi has been the one that's mostly been under fire, although I do think Matthew Stafford definitely deserves some of the blame there. He's always kind of struggled with some inaccuracy issues, and he's never really been the quarterback, and he never will be the quarterback that can really deal with pressure very well. He's not the Aaron Rodgers type who can kind of scramble out and throw darts from weird angles and things like that. Matthew Stafford has the arm to do that sort of stuff, but he doesn't really have the accuracy or the legs.
So, did Lombardi change anything schematically entering this year, or has it just been a very, very difficult thing for this particular personnel to handle?
I think it's just been a difficult thing for this personnel. The Lions basically have, I believe it's three new offensive linemen starting that weren't starting last year, and they just haven't been picking up the scheme at all. A lot of people think that the scheme is not matching exactly the skill set of some of these offensive linemen. That kind of seems like a little bit of just fan service to me. I think it's either not a good fit or the Lions are just taking even more time than most people expected to get adjusted to the system.
Let's go back a little bit further, look at the free agency. Obviously, in terms of the defensive front, when you lose guys like Sue and Fairley, Sue, who was ultra productive and ultra controversial, seemingly every year, but you replace him with Haloti Ngata. It sounds like is it correct he's probably not playing this weekend?
Yeah, he's not practiced this week, so it's looking pretty doubtful that he's going to be playing.
Bruce Arians still pointed to Ngata as a guy who is obviously not quite as quick as Sue and Fairley, but bigger and stronger. Talk free agency. What impacts have you seen in terms of the losses and then the players that you've gained over the offseason?
You kind of hit the nail on the head right there. It's really the defensive line that's really hurt the defense, although the defense is kind of enjoying a little bit of a resurgence right now. But starting off the season, the Lions weren't getting any pass rush. Their run defense was significantly worse than it was last year. And that falls on not only the loss of Sue, but basically the two guys behind him. So you have your Nick Fairley, who...
Come on.
...also went down to Miami. And so the Lions are just kind of perilously thin in terms of depth on the offensive line, or I'm sorry, the defensive line. And now both guys that they got to replace them in the offseason, Lodinana, as we just mentioned, and Tyron Walker, were both injured in the Seattle game on Monday. So they're going to be without both those guys. Tyron Walker is lost for the season. So things are going to be even more dire on the defensive line going into this week.
In terms of additions, were there any key additions that have made any impact thus far?
I would say probably the biggest addition, not this isn't technically free agency, it was a trade that they made on draft day. They traded their first-round pick, moved down about five or six spots, and picked up Manny Ramirez from the Broncos. He's been pretty helpful for an offensive line unit that's been pretty terrible. The Lions have suffered a lot of injuries along the offensive line. Larry Warford, who a lot of people consider the best offensive lineman, their right guard, has been in and out of the lineup. So having Manny Ramirez in there to kind of plug and play where he's needed has been pretty helpful. But in terms of anyone else, there really hasn't been anyone that sticks out other than Tyron Walker, who's now lost for the season.
Looking at the draft class, where does the draft class go? You took Laken Tomlinson. How has he panned out thus far?
Not well. Starting above Manny Ramirez when the Lions are fully healthy at this point, I think the thought right now is that he's going to be a longer-term project. So if the season goes the way it's headed currently, you might see him towards the end of the season just getting some reps in there to get accustomed to the NFL, but as of right now, he's not really ready to be a starter.
And we look at Abdullah, he's hasn't been super productive yet. Obviously, he didn't play the first game. He's got 34 carries in three games, and averaging about 3.4 per carry. Does he look like a guy that can lift that running game? Is it going to just take time, or is it just going to... I mean, again, you brought up the offensive line several times. Is it a case where hopefully down the line when the line gels a little bit better, we'll see better production out of him?
Yeah, absolutely. His first NFL carry was actually a 25-yard touchdown, and that was a flash of just what he can do. And he's also a pretty good threat in the passing game as well. He's very shifty, very quick. That first cut is unbelievable when he has a chance to make it. The thing is, he hasn't had a chance to make it. So his 3.4 yards per carry is pretty good when you're considering the offensive line he's dealing with.
So would he be a Reggie Bush type back? Is that what they envisioned with him, only perhaps more available and more consistent?
Yeah, I think that's the idea. He's definitely going to fill that role. I think he's a little bit better at running between the tackles and kind of, you know, having that vision, not necessarily kicking it outside all the time. And he's got better hands than Reggie Bush has. So I think it's definitely an upgrade at that position from last year. It's just a matter of the people around him improving to give him a chance to shine.
Anyone else of that draft class who is making contributions early to the team this year?
Well, the Lions are going to have to rely on now Gabe Wright, who is the defensive tackle out of Auburn, who I believe they took in the fourth round. It might have been the third. You'll see probably a lot of him on Sunday. Other than that, I think the Lions are using Alex Carter, their third-round pick, as more of a developmental type, so you won't see much of him, and that's about it for the time being.
All right, so let's look at some of the ins and outs. Obviously, the premier matchup that everyone wants to see is Patrick Peterson and Calvin Johnson. Calvin Johnson got the better of him a couple of years ago, especially with that that 77-yarder, which was really quite the play. It looked like Carlos Dansby probably intercepted, and that's what Patrick thought had happened.
Right.
But, you know, it ended up getting to Johnson, who just outran everyone for the 770 yards. Last season, Johnson got some yards, obviously, but the impact overall is because the lines didn't make it to the end zone. What way do you see this matchup going this time around? Has that's really kind of the fun matchup do you want to see? Patrick's playing at a really high level so far this season.
I think this the scales are tipping in Arizona's favor at this point. There's actually some talk about whether Calvin Johnson still has it because he just hasn't been dominating like the Calvin Johnson of old. He hasn't really had those like jump balls between four defenders that he's coming down with or anything like that. But he also hasn't really been getting the reps for that sort of thing. He hasn't really been getting the opportunities. But with the way the Lions offense has just been struggling to put up anything, I find it pretty hard to believe that Calvin Johnson is going to go off on Peterson this week.
What other matchups do you see as being key or maybe even more favorable for Detroit?
I think maybe the best matchup between the two is the Lions defense going up against the Cardinals. The Lions run defense going against the Cardinals run offense. I know the Cardinals kind of have a running back by committee and are getting a little bit healthier at that position, but the Lions have really started to shut down the run like they did last year already. So if the Lions can kind of make the Cardinals one-dimensional, and I know the Cardinals' preferred dimension is probably passing, but if they can make them one-dimensional, they can maybe put some pressure on the quarterback. I believe they sacked Russell Wilson 5 or 6 times on Monday night, so they could potentially bring the heat if they're healthy enough and if they slow down the Cardinals' running game early in the game.
How big is the return of DeAndre Levy?
That could be huge. It's definitely huge considering all the injuries are along the defensive line right now. We haven't seen Levy since the second preseason game, so it's hard to know how he's going to look coming out of this hip injury. But if he looks anything like he did in 2014 or even 2013, he's going to be huge. He's going to help both the passing defense and the run defense.
And the development of Ziggy Ansah, a guy that was intriguing in terms of the Cardinals, his name kept coming up in mock drafts way back when he was drafted. How has he looked? Bruce Arians noted how, well, actually, I think it was Carson Palmer. Arians noted he's a guy you have to watch off the edge. Carson Palmer talked about that really the key has been all he needed to do was just improve and get more experience, and he's done that. What sort of impact does Ziggy have on in terms of pass rush, in terms of impact on the defense?
Sure, yeah, and it's interesting because last week there was some talk about Ansah not exactly producing as well as he did because he wasn't getting that push inside from Ndamukong Suh this year, but then he answered on Monday night with 2 sacks of his own. So he's actually really progressing pretty well. There has been some criticism for him for not exactly having more than a pass, like a rush to the outside move. He hasn't really developed necessarily that inside move or that bull rush that could kind of make his play a little more dynamic. But he's been the one solid, consistent guy on the defensive line who's going to make a play or two pretty much every game.
How's Golden Tate been thus far this year? He's a guy that was really underrated in Seattle, really outperformed, I guess, most national expectations of him when he signed with Detroit. How's he looking this year? Again, understanding that the offense has not been productive overall.
Yeah, I mean, when they've been getting him the ball, he looks like his typical self. He's a yards-after-catch machine. He can somehow dip and dive between secondary tackles like pretty much no one I've ever seen. So he's really great on those third and mediums where you can throw it to him a couple yards short of the sticks and he'll likely reach it. So I do think he's a valuable asset. It's just a matter of getting him that ball.
And looks to... In the big, now I want to go to this game on Monday. How How did they lose? Well, first of all, how were they? How was it that you that Detroit? Because nobody plays Seattle that well at home. The closest thing that we can see is what Arizona did, but that was in 2013. Kind of grind out a win and get a big play late. With Detroit's start of the season, how is it that they were able to play that close, play that type of game, and then come up? You know, that basically they were set to have that same type of win until that fateful end. But what did Detroit do that was so successful?
Well, I was actually at that game, unfortunately, and what really kept them in that, what really kept them in that game was their defense, and part of me wants to believe that the defense of 2014 is back for the Lions. Part of me realizes that Seattle offense isn't really the team that it was, and in general, the Seahawks don't necessarily look like the team that they were. That being said, the Lions' defensive line really got after it. Like I mentioned before, I think they had 5 or 6 sacks that game, and it really just kept them in the game. They kept holding Seattle to field goals, and even when Russell Wilson would pull out these crazy kind of plays, the Lions would make sure to mitigate the damage there and only hold them to 3 points, and then they come up with kind of a big, kind of almost fluky defensive touchdown there, and suddenly they're right back in the game. Then the offense finally clicks for one drive, and well, we all saw what happened at the end of it.
Well, and obviously, I mean, Cam Chancellor made a fantastic play. Was that just did Megatron just get lazy on that play? Did he think that he was already there? Is that what happened? And then what was since you were there, because the TV really didn't notice it, what was the reaction? Was there really any reaction as to, aside from being there in Seattle, to, hey, no, that wasn't a play that KJ was allowed to do. It should have been a penalty.
Well, I'll answer that second question first. And I was so distraught at the moment. I had no idea what was going on. And, in fact, no one in the stadium, I don't think, had any idea what was going on. It wasn't until maybe an hour after the game when I was walking the streets of Seattle when Seattle fans, they started coming up to me and just saying, "You guys got jobbed, man." And I just thought they were, you know,
Calvin
Johnson. Well, I didn't even know what they were talking. I assumed they were just talking about, oh, you know, your best player had a rare mistake. And then eventually I walk into a bar and see that everyone's watching and talking. Like, I found a bunch of Lions fans who are like, "Yeah, man, we got screwed. Look, the ref missed this huge call." And I'm like, "What? Now I have to add this on to my sorrow. That's so depressing." And then I already forgot what the first part of the question was.
It was about what happened with Johnson. I mean, we saw 2 years ago in Tyrann Mathieu's debut where he reaches from behind as Jared Cook's almost to the goal line and punches the ball out.
Right.
Is that what happened? I know Chancellor and the Seahawks, that they go for the ball. They're really good at that. Was it a case where Johnson just didn't take care of the ball, or was it a fantastic play by Chancellor, or was it both?
I think it's I think it is a little bit of both. Calvin kind of has is notorious for reaching out as he's going to the ground, and rightfully so. The guy is huge. Anytime he does that, he usually picks up an extra 2 yards just by, you know, laying out his body. And so in that instance, he probably would have scored if he was able to fully extend there. That being said, you're at the goal line. There are people around. Probably not the best time to do that. You pick up a first down on that play anyways. You can probably run the ball a couple times, run the clock out, make sure the Seahawks don't have a chance to come on back, and then you win the game. But that's a lot to go through your head in, you know, 1/10 of a second. And it's hard to really fault Johnson for such a great play by Chancellor. And at the same time, you know, ball security has to be a huge priority there in the red zone at the end of the game.
So now, how dire is the situation in Detroit for the Lions? Do they look like a team? Are they talking like a team, ultra-focused? Or are they a team that is reacting and looks like a team that's about to just fall apart? Obviously, Detroit has already seen a winless team. That's almost impossible to do. What we've managed to happen, because even terrible teams manage to win games. I mean, look at that non-Peyton Manning Colts team. That was an awful, awful, awful team, and they still managed to win two games.
That was coached by Jim Caldwell.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh boy. Oh boy.
Well, I guess it depends who you're asking, whether the Lions look like they've got it together. The fandom certainly does not. I think they're already looking to 2016 at this point. But Caldwell is kind of that calm demeanor. He kind of leads by example of not flying off the handle or letting things get too crazy emotional either way. And the fans and the players themselves kind of follow that lead. So you haven't seen anyone calling out anybody or... any sort of locker room turmoil hasn't really reached the public yet, if it is happening.
Well, so, and that was exactly the type of coach that the Lions needed after their last coaching staff.
Right, of course, yeah. Everyone hated Jim Schwartz, and now everyone hates Jim Caldwell for not firing up the team enough, for not getting mad enough about the play call on Monday. You know, the grass is always greener on the other side with most football fans. I don't want to just throw Lions fans under the bus. Most people, you know, when things aren't going right, it's because they don't have the exact opposite of whatever head coach they currently have.
That's pretty much how it goes. So, what do you think? So, I've got a bigger question then. So, if they're already looking forward, if Lions fans are looking forward to 2016 and beyond, any chance you might want to trade Matthew Stafford to the Cardinals for, say, a 6th or a 7th round pick?
I bet there are some fans that would say yes to that. I would not be one of them. I realize Matthew Stafford isn't going to be that elite guy. He's not going to be the Peyton Manning, the Tom Brady, the Aaron Rodgers, any of those guys. But I do think he's good enough to lead the Lions to the playoffs if they have the surrounding cast.
Which he's already done.
He has, yes. And I even think he could potentially win a playoff game, which he very, very nearly did last year. But he's not going to be that guy that makes everyone around them extremely better. I think he'll be, you know, kind of in the same vein of your Eli Manning, your Joe Flacco's
I've got a perfect comp for him. It's Carson Palmer. The same type of...
Yeah.
You look at his career trajectory. Matthew Stafford, top pick. He has some eye-popping numbers, but he's playing for a team that hasn't traditionally been a very good one. He doesn't win playoff games. The only thing that's missing, obviously, is the... Palmer had the whole trade me or I'll retire, which really did a number on his reputation. Stafford hasn't had that, but he has the same type of physical traits, mental, because he's also a guy who is really good in the clutch. But he's the same type of player because he's a guy that doesn't, like, by himself. He's not Peyton. He's not even Tony Romo in that sense, because Tony Romo, take the Cowboys without Tony Romo, they're a disaster. Historically, until they kind of built up their offensive line. But he's a guy that you're going to see a team takes, if the Lions give up on him at some point, a team that builds sort of the same way the Cardinals have for Palmer, he's going to go somewhere and have a resurgence of sorts where he's going to turn into a winning type guy, because Palmer still has yet to come to win a playoff game, and it's kind of the same mold. And I look at Stafford and say, hey, he's really the sort of the next Carson Palmer, I think, because the skill set is certainly there, the health is there, the ability's there. It's just the situation isn't.
Yeah, and we've seen Matthew Stafford be, you know, that borderline elite guy in 2011 when he had over 5,000 passing yards. He had over 40-some touchdowns and only, like, 12 or so interceptions. And he was really one of the best quarterbacks in the league that year and was kind of robbed of the Pro Bowl, but since then, it's just kind of been a strange downward trajectory of fired coaches, bad running games, bad offensive lines, no second receiver behind Calvin Johnson. There's just kind of been excuses popping up every year, and after a while you just kind of get sick of it, and you're like, well, maybe some of this is on Stafford. So, you know, you kind of take the good with the bad with Stafford.
And as will obviously when you note when you look at a team like Houston or Cleveland, and you're like, yeah, we love Matthew
Stafford.
It
could be worse. Yeah, exactly.
It's exactly what you, because you have a decent situation, you just have to put it all together. So how do you see the season playing out? Let's kind of play two games. Obviously, 0-4 bad. 0-5 sort of, it feels like the season falls apart. What do you see happening with this Lions team if they lose on Sunday with the rest of their season? And if they pull out a win against an equally hungry Cardinals team who lost a tough one on Sunday, if they pull out a win at home, what does that do for their season if they win?
You know, I don't really think the season can be salvaged unless we see a dramatic turnaround on offense. It's really been one of the worst offenses in the league so far through 4 weeks. So unless they come out somehow miraculously against one of the better defenses in the league this week and fire off, you know, 30, 40 points, I don't think a lot of people are going to have a lot of optimism that they're going to be able to continue success, even if they do win the game scoring 20-some points or something like that. If they lose, which I think most people are pretty much expecting at this point, it's just going to be more of the same, more of the talk about firing offensive coordinator Joe Lombardi. Even Jim Caldwell's kind of started to leak into that conversation about his head being on the guillotine, so to speak. And, you know, then we're talking starting anew in 2016, which is always depressing to talk about in week six.
So how do you see this game playing out in your mind? If the let me fill in the kind of the complete the statement. The Lions win if fill in the blank, and the Lions lose if fill in the blank.
The Lions
and
win.
And don't tell me that if they score more points than the Cardinals and if they lose, if they score less points. No, I don't want that.
the Lions will win if DeAndre Levy is enough to keep that defense afloat and even improve upon last week's performance, and if the offense can somehow muster some sort of semblance of a decent unit like they kind of did at the end of the game last week. They lose if everything that's been happening continues to happen. So Matthew Stafford is continually under duress. The Lions can't get anything going on the running game. And they really haven't been great at defending the pass either. So if Carson Palmer can kind of continue his impressive 2015, then that's going to put the Lions behind early. And when the Lions are behind early, that offense really can't get going to get them back in the game.
All right. Well, Jeremy, again, I thank you so very much for the time on the show tonight. I'll save the prediction for the five questions that I'll send you those tonight or early morning. I do my writing most early in the morning.
Sure.
But I'll get those to you and answer the questions that you already sent me. So we'll have that on a post later this week. Jeremy, how can people over in our part of land follow you on Twitter or follow the site on Twitter?
Yeah, you can follow the site at Pride of Detroit, at PRIDEOFDETROIT. And you can follow me personally at Detroit on Lion. I won't bother spelling that one out for you. Yeah, and follow us on Facebook and all that good stuff.
All right. Well, it's been a pleasure, Jeremy. Thank you for joining us. That's Jeremy Reisman from Pride of Detroit, our SB Nation site. Head on over if you're not already a member of the site. Head on over to Pride of Detroit. Become a member. Is there a waiting period before they can comment and participate?
I don't believe so. And if there is, it's only one day. So,
okay. So fans,
we're a friendly bunch.
Get on over there. Join in the conversations. If you look at historically, we can share a lot of experiences in terms of not so great history. There's a bunch. It's a It's a proud group, but it's a sad group, and we recognize that. So, Jeremy, thanks for coming on, and we'll talk to you again, hopefully, maybe either. Well, if not next year, because it almost seems like next year, maybe you guys can turn it around, and we'll face each other in the postseason. How's that sound?
I can dream, can't I?
Dreaming is free indeed. Thanks for coming on. This is another edition of Revenge of the Birds Radio. Talk to you next week with the All Cardinal Show when we come back with Seth Cox. You've been listening to Revenge of the Birds. Keep the conversation going by visiting revengeofthebirds.com. Follow us on Twitter at Revenge of Birds. You can also find us on iTunes at facebook.com/Revenge of the Birds.